BBC Six Music Podcasts. Six Music. This is a free download from the BBC. Find out more at bbc.co.uk/6music. And now, Adam and Joe.
Hey, listeners, how you doing? It's Adam Buxton.
Oh, what kind of a new personality is that?
It's sort of avuncular, like I've
it's
got a Hawaiian shirt on and I'm at a party. Hey, I've got like a spatula in one hand and a burger in the other hand and I'm like a party guy. Hey, listeners, thanks for coming to the radio party. Hey.
You sound like an awful idiot hole.
I'm your
party
uncle.
I don't want to attend to.
I'm Uncle Buck.
Uncle Buck. I'm a kid, that's
hey,
my
job. You want a keg of beer?
No thanks, Uncle Buck.
Hey, let's do some boogie. Cheer up, it might never happen.
Yeah, you're like the film Uncle Buck, only it has a really down ending.
Yeah.
He doesn't become popular. He doesn't start going out with what's her face.
What is her face?
Don't know. Anyway, welcome to the podcast, listeners. The highlights of our live show from BBC Six Music every Saturday morning from 9 till noon.
You know what happened yesterday was I was feeling a little bit low and insecure.
Oh,
I mean, I really shouldn't mention this, actually, because it's stupid. It's funny how when you're physically under threat, you know, mentally you
the
can,
elbow.
Yeah, the elbow.
Or the chill cake.
Like I've been in a lot of pain this week because of my flipping elbows.
I'm in pain right now because of the flipping chill cake.
You'll find out about the chill cake later on, listeners. You know, I was feeling a bit mentally low and I actually found myself thinking, like sometimes you can hear your thoughts, you know what I mean? I mean, if they're in your head, obviously.
Sometimes yeah. I can hear your thoughts.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Some of that stuff's disgusting.
It's disgusting. And I found myself thinking, I'm going to look at where the Adam and Joe podcast is in the podcast charts. And if it is still in the top 20, I'm going to feel better about myself.
11. It's been at 11, hasn't it?
At first, I scanned the list and I couldn't see it. And I was like, oh, we dropped out of the top 20. I feel even worse about myself. And then I saw it was 9. I danced a little jig, had a little sandwich, had a little party in my house.
It's been higher than that. It's been above Jonathan Ross.
No.
Yeah.
Who can be above Jonathan
and
Ross?
In fact, I got a phone message from Jonathan last week saying he downloaded all of our back catalogue. That's quite flattering, isn't it?
Yeah, I wonder what turned him on to the idea. Maybe his family are getting into them.
Yeah, maybe.
Like that. Or maybe we paid him to do that.
Maybe.
And is he enjoying them?
No, he hates them.
He absolutely loathes
yeah, he
them.
He particularly hates you.
He finds me annoying.
But he thinks I've got something.
Yes,
yeah,
does he?
He does. He thinks I might take over from him.
He thinks the retro Text the Nation jingle's really good. You know what I mean? There was a wave of praise for the retro Text the Nation jingle this week, and it really got me quite angry. Because I work my fingers to the bone making
jingles.
You do
a million jingles.
Show.
I've only done one.
He's done one. And everyone... Oh, I love the hypnotic retro Text the Nation jingle. The bewitching... I can't stop singing. It's so catchy. I've done a samba version. My band wants to play it. You two are going to cover it. It's the best song ever written. The Queen wants to sing it at the Christmas party. It's like, for goodness sake, why can't people get excited about the appropriation jingle?
You know what?
Or the made-up jokes jingle?
I would tell you right now to have a slice of chill cake, but even that's lost its kind of impact, hasn't it? Yeah, well. This show's falling apart.
Let's get into the podcast.
We've been poisoned by a listener.
Yeah, you'll find out what we're talking about later on. Have a good one.
We'll be back at the end.
Bye.
This is a big British castle podcast with some talking from the Adam and Joe Show radiogram. You can listen to it while you're on your way to work. And when you get there, you can listen on the loo. How do you do?
I've got a new idea for a segment.
Have you?
Yeah, it would be this. It's a bit like, you know, on GMTV when they would send Keith Chegwin out with to doorstep people first thing in the morning.
Was that on GMTV?
Something like that.
Big Breakfast.
It was on one of those breakfast shows.
Yeah,
Big Breakfast. Maybe you're right. I thought maybe I could present the show from in a listener's bed.
That's a nice idea. Would you get to choose the listener?
Yeah.
They would send in photographs and you would vet them.
Yeah.
And you would basically sleep.
I would go around there on Friday. No, I would sleep with them.
Oh, you'd sleep with
but
them.
But in the, you know, not in the, yeah, not in the dirty sense.
No, in the strictest sense of the word.
Unless they were lucky.
Yeah, unless they were really lucky.
But I'd go around there on Friday night. And we'd watch telly, you know, we'd watch Jonathan Ross, then a bit of later.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd have a hot toddy.
Would you do your Jules Holland impression for them?
Yeah, I'd do whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
And then I'd get into bed with them.
Oh, there's a hot toddy, ladies and gentlemen, hot toddy. Go on, do it.
I can't do it. Not the beginning of the show. I'd get into bed with them and then we'd sleep together.
Yeah.
And then the alarm would go off about 10 to 9. Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be nice. Mm-hmm. And then you'd have to be in here. You'd get up. You'd have to come in.
Right.
Do all the business. I'd just be in bed nude. I would be nude with the listeners.
Yeah.
And then I'd do the show from my mobile phone over my mobile phone.
That's brilliant. You've thought it all through and you're entirely comfortable about all this. You don't think it's weird at all.
I don't think it's weird.
And you don't think the listeners would feel it was strange?
I don't
weird.
Know. We'll see what their response is. I mean, maybe we can set it up for next week or the week after. And I think it would be very innovative, I think it would get us awards.
Innovative, and it would get us awards. And you're not concerned that maybe there's some kind of big British Castle guideline about having like a
naked presenter,
naked
next
man
to listeners.
in the bed of a stranger.
I think it could be overcome.
Right.
I think public opinion would soon demolish that prejudice.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. It's just an idea. I just thought I'd float it.
Oh, thank you. It's a lovely floater.
Adam and Joe.
Naughty.
Ooh. My nipples.
Do you like getting virals?
The one I've enjoyed this week is the clip from Roland Emmerich's forthcoming film 2012.
Oh, yeah.
There's a 10-minute, extraordinary 10-minute clip of that online with all disaster stuff. And someone's taken out all the disaster footage, so it's just the acting.
Uh-huh.
And it's very funny.
And very short, I would imagine.
Pretty short, yeah. I've enjoyed that one this week. But, you know, by and large, not really.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my heart doesn't soar when a new link comes through from someone I barely know.
I get up and start dancing.
Do you? A new nutty viral.
You'll never believe this. Actually, no, that's not true. It doesn't happen very often in our house. But my wife bounded over to me one evening and said, "Have you seen this?" Because she doesn't get virals very often, I don't think. Viruses, yes, but virals, no. And she said, so she opened up her computer. She was dead excited. She said, "I don't know if this is real or not."
Right?
Uh-oh. I was already thinking, well, it's probably not real. And she said, "Have a look at this. You've got to read all the text first," she says, right? It's like she's never seen one of these things before. And so basically it was all about this couple who had been out on holiday with their son. They'd been scuba diving and they had an underwater camera. They said to the son, "Can you take a picture of mum and dad underwater with our scuba gear on?" The son goes to take their picture.
Can I guess?
Yeah, go on.
Massive shark approaching behind them?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Right.
Massive shark. And so there's this whole story about how he's gesticulating and mum and dad are saying, "Karen, can you just take the picture?" Afterwards, he shows them the picture. He goes, "Weren't you freaked out?" And they're like, "What do you mean?" He says, look at the picture.
There's a famous photo of someone standing on top of the Twin Towers.
That's right.
With a plane right over his shoulder.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there were lots of faked ones like that, weren't there?
I remember when that one came out, it was so shocking that I just thought, who would fake this up anyway? But this is slightly different. This one is more sort of sweet. But it is obviously fake. Like, it's an absolutely giant shark, right?
And from the one from George.
Yeah, no, it's like the one from Finding Nemo.
Right.
You know?
And not animated.
It's not actually animated. It's a decent Photoshop job of this couple kind of doing the thumbs up in their scuba gear with this enormous shark. And so I sort of laughed and my wife said, "Do you think it's real?" I was like, "No, it's not real." She said, "Well, how do you know?" We're just laughing, saying, "No, it's not real. How do you know?" I said, "Well, look at the size of the shark. It's an absolutely huge shark. If that shark really, if that picture had been taken, that would be on the news." She said, "That's your logic, is it? That it would be on the news if it's..." And I was like, why are you getting angry? Are you upset because it's not real? Listen, I'm sorry. Maybe it's real. I don't think it is real. And we had a little tension exchange about the fact that I poo-pooed the viral. But she was outraged that my logic was it would have been on the news.
Yeah, well, that is weird logic. Good evening. This is the news. Couple you're, almost eaten.
You'll never believe shark. This picture. Coming up.
I mean, if the news covered stuff like that,
they
that's
would,
all they'd have on the news.
If that was a real picture, that would have been
I'm
on the
divided.
News.
I'm half with your wife.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, you both come across as idiots.
Have a look at the picture.
Yeah, what?
Count Buckley's has his arm in a sling.
Yeah.
Yare mentioned it at the end of his show because he saw it. It's quite a shocking sight. It's one of those sort of pathetic slings.
Well, no.
Kind of a pink... No, what do you mean, well, no?
What do you mean, pathetic?
Well, it's not a proper... You haven't got your arm in plaster, and it's not a big piece of proper white cloth.
No.
It's sort of pink, foamy fabric.
Yeah.
The sort of kind of stuff that a float is made out of in the pool Vaguely? I don't know. Not
a
really.
Little bit.
It's foamy.
It's surgical foam.
It's surgical foam.
It was done by a doctor in the A&E department.
Really? And it's just loosely around the wrist. It's the kind of thing that kids would come to with school and then manage to get out of all lessons, even though it didn't look very painful.
You know, Yare correctly pointed out that I could easily have got out of this show.
You could, couldn't
and
you?
I was considering yesterday. I phoned Garth to see if he would be able to do
did
it.
Did you?
Yeah, I was in hospital all day yesterday.
Really? Well, this is what I'm leading up to. Ad, it looks bad, man. Tell us, tell everyone what.
Well,
the
I was
deal
moaning
is
about my elbow, a mysterious swelling on my elbow, right elbow, about 3 weeks now, 4 weeks ago it was now.
For the last 4 years, weeks? No, for 4 weeks.
I was hilariously referring to it as my painful Guy Garvey, in the mistaken belief that it would clear up and go away. It hasn't. It's just got worse. Went to the, finally I was in so much pain, like a couple of nights back. It doesn't look like anything.
Oh, doesn't it?
No. And I was in so much pain, couldn't move, literally almost crying, that I finally had to go into A&E, right? Because I was getting no joy from my doctor. I went to my GP. Mm. He told me to tough it out.
He didn't.
Yeah.
I would have thought that was the kind of thing you'd respond to.
Tough it out. Well, I did. At that point, when I was in with the GP, I wasn't in such agonizing pain. It was just persisting. I was like, why hasn't this gone away? He said, oh, you should just tough it out. In a month, it'll be a distant memory. So I said, all right, I'll tough it out. I thought, okay, fair enough. Bit of reassurance from the doc. But that night, tears of pain rolling down my cheeks, right? I couldn't move or anything. Like the slightest movement would just send me into paroxysms of agony. So I go into A&E. Right? Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
Lady at the A&E takes down my details. I describe what's going on. She goes, that's not really the kind of thing you're supposed to come into A&E for.
It's not an accident.
No, she said, it's not. So it's not really an emergency.
Is it an emergency? That if the pain's intense, that's an emergency, right?
I said, the pain is unbearable and it feels as if it's just getting worse and I don't know what to do. And my GP has been of no use to me. So what am I supposed to do?
Tough it out.
Tough it out. Well, I toughed it out, waited for 3 hours in A&E, and then they saw me. They were very nice indeed. And then the day after that, I went back in for a battery of tests, blood tests, x-rays.
Oh, you look happy about that.
Well, it's nice to have a battery of
his
tests.
His eyes lit up on battery of
because
tests.
Then you feel something's being done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're looking into it.
Yeah.
You're not being told to tough it out.
Yeah.
You're not being asked if you're under a lot of stress.
Have you had the results back?
Yeah, to all normal, right? Which makes it even worse.
Wow, so it's like a mystery disease.
Mystery disease.
Really?
So I got various people coming in and poking and prodding me, which is very painful. Specialists. And then they started taking samples from
biopsies,
my joints, injecting my elbow.
Yeah.
I've never experienced such excruciating pain.
Didn't they give
pain
you a local?
A little local, but she said, this is just going to numb the skin. It's still going to be very painful. And sure enough, it was unbelievable. I nearly passed out. It was amazing. Is there no way that we can, like, haven't the BBC got, like, a staff doctor, a special...
I think they do.
...castle doctor?
There's a BBC dentist, apparently, that I'm really excited about. Let's take care of this. Ben's saying no, but we'll make one up.
Can't we get, like, a...
Let's get Steve Lamacq in a doctor's outfit.
That would be great. Yeah, he could suck the blood out of my
exactly
elbow.
He'd give you a full-body blood transfusion.
You just need to drink the blood that is built up on the elbow.
Retrotextination has got a jingle.
People love the jingle.
They do, but it had a, like, an earlier incarnation. Do you remember that? A sort of a funkier,
well, it started out as a funky track that you did over a garage band thing, right?
And a gentleman called John Paul Spears sent in the following email. Hi, Joe and Adam. I've recorded a jingle bed for you. The vocal from the original Retrotextination should slot perfectly into this backing track. I estimated your tempo at 114 beats per minute and used that. It's based on the jazz standard one-note samba, Love from Spearsy.
Nice one, Spears.
So he, by ear, figured out the precise tempo of the original jingle and then made this bed for it, and I popped it into GarageBand and popped the vocals over it, and it works amazingly.
Yeah.
And I think Spears has set an extraordinary... Spearsy, he's set an extraordinary precedent and showed incredible skill, cunning, and acumen that other listeners might like to rise to his challenge. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they might like to rise to his acumen.
I mean, check out how well this fits.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel a deep frustration because I couldn't join in with the text of the nation. But now my worries have disappeared. And now my mail might be read out instead of thrown in the bin I've forgotten about.
And you did bin in there as well.
I've switched it to bin.
We got an avalanche of angry mails about people saying, why did you kowtow to a little bit of anti-American trash pressure?
Here's one. I mean, if you weren't listening last week, you remember that we got an email from a girl called Clem and her sisters saying that they didn't like the use of the word trash in that jingle.
Yeah.
Thought it was an Americanism, and they wanted me to change it to bin, so I did change it to bin. But as Adam says, we got loads of mail complaining about that. Here, for instance, is one from Will Took. Your email from the Voice of the People, Clem, last week concerning the use of the word trash in Retro Text the Nation was certainly passionate, but academically shoddy. In Julius Caesar, Act 4, Scene 3, Brutus wonders whether he shall be forced to sell the mighty space of our large honours for so much trash as may be grasped. Similarly, in Henry IV, Part 2, Act 1, Scene 4, the Duke of York orders his soldiers to, quote, lay hands upon those traitors and their trash. Moreover, both Caliban and his master, the magician Prospero in The Tempest, use the work. If one consults the Oxford English Dictionary, they will find that John Skelton, another Englishman, Henry VIII's tutor, no less, uses the term in his morality play Magnificence, first performed in 1518, less than 30 years after Columbus discovered the New World in 1492.
Also, I think if you go and see Hamlet at the moment, there's a bit in there where he says, and now my message might be read out instead of thrown in the trash and forgotten about. That's been reinstated.
Hamlet.
That's a Shakespeare play.
Yeah, good one. Will provides a massive amount of evidence there that trash is not an Americanism, it's a British word. Other people saying that, of course, we receive most messages digitally, so you would drag them into the trash on the screen. But I don't know, you can't please everyone all the time, can you?
You shouldn't even try.
Well, I've started trying.
Yeah, you shouldn't. That's where you went wrong.
Now? Well, what if I do a version which says bin and trash simultaneously?
No.
I
tell you what you should do.
Trin.
Because now you feel too proud to switch it back, right?
Mm.
Now you feel like you're going to be Johnny Flip-Flop. You should go and switch it back.
I feel like I'm going to be Johnny Flip-Flop.
Yeah?
No, I want to be Johnny Flip-Flop.
Tommy U-turn. You should just switch it back, guy.
I want to be Tommy Flip-Flop.
Don't be like all these people like British Airways who spend however many millions of pounds rebranding and then everyone goes, it was much better before. Just switch back, guy.
I can't stop thinking about Tommy Flip-Flop.
Johnny Flip-Flop.
Johnny Flip-Flop.
Wasn't he?
I don't know. There's two of them now.
That's Tommy U-turn.
They're wicked. All they're wearing is little Speedos.
Listen,
flip-flops.
Johnny Flip-Flop, if the Retro Text the Nation jingle is not back to trash next week, I'm going to beat you.
Really?
I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration because I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. But now my worries have disappeared. Because Retro Text the Nation's here. And now my mail might be read out instead of thrown in the trash and forgotten about.
What was the subject of Text the Nation last week, Adam?
It was kind of new demented shops inspired by a trip to a shop called Hollister in Westfield Shopping Centre where all the staff are ridiculously good looking and it's incredibly dark and super air conditioned and the music's very loud. So we were thinking of new things to do to jazz up the shopping experience.
So here are some of the emails we got. This is from Michael Lumley in Leeds. Hi, Adam and Joe. My idea for this week's Text the Nation would be a sweatshop.
Oh, I thought it was a sweet shop.
This shop has the look and feel of a traditional sweatshop. Ah, oh, that's nice. A traditional sweatshop. With many orphan children working at sewing machines. Each child produces a different coloured T-shirt with writing on it. And you buy the T-shirt straight from the children themselves. This makes the shopper feel very guilty seeing the poor orphans and immediately begin buying various coloured T-shirts with writing on them from the various orphan children. Michael Lumley and Lees. Now, that's a very good idea.
It would certainly be nice to put a face to the little children.
Exactly. And it'd be good to see them in the flesh. And if
in
you
an
watch,
authentic environment.
A traditional environment.
Traditional environment.
If you watch BBC Three, every other show on that channel seems to be some kind of teenage girl going to India to get angry about the sweatshops.
Uh-huh.
There seems to be a kind of a queue.
You love BBC Three.
I do love their documentaries, yeah. There was one on the other day as well. And just these very, very quite sort of... pretty overly made up teenage girls going and putting their hands on their hips and shouting at sweatshop owners. How can you possibly do this? This is disgusting. This place should be closed down. Which is quite right, obviously,
yeah.
But possibly simplifies the economic and social issues.
Apparently not. They've all been closed down.
Have they been closed down? Thanks
that,
to her.
I think since that documentary.
Good stuff. But they could do that in this shop as well. They could have a kind of manager. He'd just be an actor.
Yeah.
And you could shout at him, you know. You could really complain about all the injustice in the world.
Yes.
And they could kind of mime closing down the shop.
It would be very cathartic. And then you come out and you've got a T-shirt with writing
on it.
Exactly.
But as soon as you leave, they all go back to work.
I like it.
They reset.
Here's one from Stuart Bell in Cambridge. He says, "Dear Buckles and Cornballs, my idea for a high concept shop would be to have it decked out like an old style school outfitters, with all different uniforms in separate places. In this case, however, instead of schools, they would be various visually identifiable subculture groups. So you'd have the skinny jeans and grubby hoodies indie kids section, a corner of black items for the goths and so on. Where the brilliance arrives is that the shopping experience is just like going shopping for school uniform with your mum. You're assigned a lady to help you, who not only picks out appropriate clothes for you,
Once you've told her your school, did you read it through first?
No, not this one.
You're just coming to terms with it live.
I was trying to make it sound like I had.
It's a good idea, man. Keep going.
But also make sure you.
But also, you see,
make sure you buy things that fit and chivvies you along in the changing rooms, etc. I don't like shopping very much, and this would be a big help. It ended well, though.
Stuart Bell in Cambridge. Now discuss that, Adam.
It's just the middle bit that went
wrong.
Stuart's idea.
What was Stuart's idea?
Stuart's idea.
You were concentrating so hard on just getting the words out.
For a shop.
You didn't actually hear.
It's like a shop, and they sell goth clothes in one corner.
Goth clothes?
Goth clothes.
Oh, goth clothes.
And indie clothes in the other corner, and there's a woman who shouts at you. How is that different to his idea?
It's kind of the same, but he's talking about like a school uniform. He's drawing a comparison between contemporary styles and school uniforms. He's saying contemporary fashion is basically like a series of school uniforms.
Right.
And you could go into a shop like a school uniform shop and be measured and allocated the correct uniform.
That came across.
But you'd have to go with your mummy.
Yeah. I'd said all that. Have you got one?
It's a good idea, though, isn't it?
Very good. Well done, Stuart in Cambridge. Yeah. Sorry, I massacred your letter.
Watch out, it's Adam and Joe coming from space to your brain. They got a little pack of highlights from the Six Music Show for you to hear again.
They got rid of all of the music and the bits were incredibly crappy. So now there ain't a whole lot left, but hopefully enough to keep you happy. Here we go.
Now, we had a few messages from people who had heard my voice on the Philippe Starck sort of, what would you call it? It's not really a documentary, is it?
I don't think it is a documentary.
It's one of those kind of elimination
shows.
It's a reality series. It's like a reality elimination thing, a little bit like The Apprentice.
It's a design apprentice.
Right.
The Apprentice for Contemporary Design.
And it's on BBC, is it on Tuesday evenings?
I don't know.
Sometime around.
It's a prime time proposition, though. It's like a 9 o'clock thing. And
he's a ridiculous, over-the-top French design figure. I mean, he's a legend.
Quite brilliant.
In the industry. You reckon he's brilliant, do you?
Well, he's very... Yeah, he is, because he's completely distinct, and you can tell a Philippe Starck thing.
Can you? What's his most famous design?
The Philippe Starck golf ball, of course.
Is that true?
Yes, it is a triangle.
Well, someone suggested the other day that I replace or fool around with the VO, because I do the voiceover,
right? You do the voiceover, yeah, and it is disconcerting for... I mean, I sat down and watched it the first week it was on.
And I'm trying to do
it had your voice in it.
I tried to do a serious one as well.
Yeah, but it's hard not for it to be a bit funny, even when you try and do your serious voice.
I was directed to be serious by the director.
But it's odd, and especially when we know that you do quite an outrageously peculiar French accent yourself.
Yeah.
It does not sound dissimilar to Stark's outrageously peculiar French accent.
Well, with that in mind, I've slightly retooled the first minute or so of the program.
Good one.
World-renowned designer Philippe Starck has set out to find Britain's best young creative talent.
Great design is all about the unexpected idea, like a bed made out of glass, or a glass made out of glass, and a bed.
From hundreds of online applicants, he chose 12 to join his School of Design in Paris.
Bonjour, les Anglais, poubou-la-la.
Now he's putting them through their paces to find the best of the best.
I'll use the best of the best.
Yeah.
Okay, you stay.
Thank you.
One up-and-coming designer who's worthy of a place at his own agency.
I am crazy. Okay, I'll say what I think, because I'm a genius. Look at my nipples. Woo-hoo.
So far, he has challenged them to rethink everything they know.
Okay. Okay, you know mugs, okay, for drinking the coffee, the tea? Rethink. Instead, use the smashed hat of a tramp.
He has praised their high moments.
Oh, Tina, you make the chair out of the lolly sticks. That's clever.
And slammed their low ones.
This chair is made of actual lollies. That's no good.
And when students fail to meet his exacting standards...
Why do none of the mice have shoes? Can you tell me this? Where are the shoes for the mice?
A return journey through the Channel Tunnel beckons.
I want you to go out through the Channel Tunnel now, like a big fart. Because that's what you are to me, a massive, great fart of a person. Go, go away, get out of my sight, out of it now. And take your lolly chair with you.
That's a better program.
Yeah, oh, come on.
It's a much better program.
Text the nation. Text, text, text. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
So Text the Nation this week, listeners, is going to be about celebrity or famous name repurposing. And this is where you use the name of a famous person in your everyday life as a kind of way of denoting something else.
Yeah.
Okay, here are some examples. If I want, personally, if I want to say to somebody, are you sure? You know, find out whether they're certain about something. And I want to reiterate that. I might say, are you sure? Yeah, but are you poorly sure? Yeah? He's a comedian.
He's
right?
an American
it's
comedian.
It's easy. It's as easy, simple as that. Here's another one. If I say to my girlfriend I'm just off to have a bath, I sometimes like to call it a B-arth, right? As if there's a full stop after the B. And then that mutates into I'm just off to have a B-arther, who's one of the Golden Girls.
Yeah. Who's B-arth? Oh, I see. Right.
A B-arth. I'm going to have a bath.
Yeah.
I'm off to have a B-arth.
Yeah.
I'm just going to have a B-arther.
Which is a very different prospect.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Equally cleansing.
Certainly.
Or, here's a third example. The other day I was watching a film on television that will remain nameless. It was kind of not very well directed, I thought. So I said to my girlfriend, is this directed by Michael Flatley? Yeah, see where that's going.
Because
she
the direction's
said,
very flat.
I said, well, it's very flatly directed.
Yes.
So that's the kind of thing we're after. Taking famous names and using them in everyday conversation to pep things up.
What did your girlfriend do when you
She said,
that?
Oh, Joe, I love you. You're so clever and sexy. Then we...
Let's go to bed.
Yes.
Yeah. Well done. Michael Flatley.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
nice.
So send in your suggestions. I've only got those three. I'm sure
there's some
more.
In... there's a good episode of Seinfeld when they're looking at someone sunbathing topless and one of them says, Yo, yo, ma.
That's good.
And then...
The famous cellist.
And then Jerry comes back
Is
with...
Is she a cellist?
Yeah, he, I think.
Is he a cellist?
And then Jerry comes back with, Boutros, Boutros, golly.
I'm a funny person. I often make up jokes. My jokes are more amusing than those of other folks. When you hear my joke, I think you'll find that you agree. Come on, you're all invited to a made-up joke party.
So the idea here, listeners, is these are authored jokes, right?
Yeah.
You have to be honest about it and send us in jokes that you've actually thought of. We're going to apply various rigorous criteria to them to make sure we only get the freshest baked jokes.
And there's been an awful lot of controversy about who's been stealing whose jokes and who's been claiming that their jokes were theirs. Sophie Ellis-Bextor was on Twitter the other day.
Using the Schwarzenegger joke.
Yeah. I still love Easter, baby.
Yeah.
And she was using it uncredited.
But then if we get upset about that,
I'm not upset about
inferring that we or the person who sent us that joke made it up.
Yeah.
Do we think that?
Well, I don't know. You see, you get into difficult territory, don't you?
You see, again, Hasta La Vista, Baby. When does that date from?
Well, that's the 80s, isn't it?
Mm.
Late 80s?
Exactly. So someone must have thought of it.
I still love Easter, baby.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, here's a message as well from someone else who feels very wronged. Messrs. Buxton and Cornish, he says, this is Simon, and he says, I'm a 24-year-old architect and find great joy in your podcast, which I enjoy very much. You might remember me as I was the one who kindly sent you my badminton joke earlier in the year. I was listening this week and I was deeply saddened by you accrediting my joke to Tim Vine. That was you who was saying that joke.
Well, I think somebody sent that in as an accusation.
A lot of my friends listen to your podcasts, and when you read out my joke, I enjoyed near celebrity status for a while. Well, a week anyway. Especially after you used my joke in the Glastonbury tent, which we did. We read out like the best, our favourite jokes.
It went down very well. It's a good joke.
It's
There's no doubting that.
Can you remind us what the joke was?
My dog ate a shuttlecock. My dog Minton ate a shuttlecock. Badminton.
It's a smash.
It's a smash.
He says, now you've thrown my contribution to your show back in my face, in capitals, and you've ridiculed me in front of the nation. I can genuinely say I did author that joke, and I now apologise for trying to spread a little joy and contribute to the magic you chaps produce on the airwaves. Maybe this Tim Vine chap nicked the joke off me, eh? What about that? Summary of this ranting email in Captain Duck children's book style. This is something we did on the podcast the other day. We did an intro in like a children's book. He says, my Minton joke read on Adam and Joe. How proud could I be to get on the show? But after using the joke, the joy is short-lived. Buckles and Cornballs just called me a div. I tell you the truth, this isn't a whine. I've never even heard of Chuffing Tim Vine. No faith in this listener has caused me great pain. Oh, Adam and Joe, redeem my good name. Kind regards, must get back to work, Simon. So you got one there, Joe?
Yeah, here's one. This is a short, punchy one. Here's one from John Gibbons. How does Alan Sugar get his kids to go to bed? You're tired.
Nice.
I like that one. It's practical.
That's good.
It's a household joke. It's useful.
All right, let's keep it short and punchy. What sort of food does Sean Connery refuse to share?
I don't know.
Shellfish.
Mm.
I mean, that's probably not authored. Mm. There's probably been a few authors there. What's wrong with that?
Oh, I don't know.
Shellfish. It's a good partner to...
Well, because we read out Tennis as well, didn't we?
Yeah, that's good too.
Yeah.
That would be good in America.
Here's one I think is probably authored. Why can I always rely on my friend, the baking rasta bird? Because he's my bread wren.
Bread wren.
That's like an inner city kind of an urban joke.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
That's down on the front line they're telling that joke. Here's one from right, Brendan Blackshaw in Watford, and this is the first of a couple of incredibly technical ones, right?
Good, good.
What do you call a group of bad writers who are pregnant and living in South London when they experience false contractions? Brixton Hacks. It says, Adam, you may need to explain this one to Joe, as it's probably one for mums and dads. Love the show, but did you get that
one,
Joe?
But then again, I live in Brixton, so I should at least be able to get half of it.
Have you heard of Braxton Hicks?
No, what is that?
Yeah, they're contractions, like phantom contractions that come at the beginning of...
Is that somebody's name? Braxton Hicks?
Well, presumably the phenomenon was named after a medical person called Braxton Hicks.
Would that be a nice thing to have named after you?
Phantom Contractions.
Is there a band called Phantom Contractions?
Well, maybe there is
there
now.
There should be.
That's a good joke, though, Brendan.
Yeah,
Blackshaw.
That is good. Here's one from James
Brixton
in Melbourne.
Hacks.
Hi, guys. A couple of nights ago, while I was asleep and dreaming, I thought of a joke and it went like this. What do you call an elderly lady detective with a weight problem? Glandular Lansbury.
Nice. I read that one. That made me chuckle.
It's good.
Well. Do you want another technical one?
Yes.
This is from Nick in Nottingham. Dear Buckles and Cornballs, hi. This is a joke my friend Henry made up. He's very proud of it. Question, how much does energy cost? Answer, ATP. And then he goes on to explain. In biology, ATP, the letters, stands for adenosine triphosphate, which is an energy source produced during cellular respiration and viewed by biologists to be the energy currency of life. This is basic GCSE science, so hopefully the joke will find a wide audience that it so richly deserves. Love the show, guys. Nick in Nottingham. ATP.
That's funny. We've had some trouble with Harry Potter jokes in the recent past. They're controversial things, but here's one I think there'll be no arguing over from Christopher Matheson in New York City. Hi, Adam and Joe. I know you're both film buffs, but did you hear about that new film about a speleologist working out of the Zimbabwean capital who would get very angry every time he had to excrete either saliva from his mouth or flatulence from his buttocks?
Whoa.
It was called Harare Potholer and the Gob Stroke Let Off Ire.
Oh, my God. Goodness.
Harare Potholer and the Gob Let Off Ire.
Who's that
from? Did you get it? Christopher Matheson in New York City. I mean, that's brilliant.
You know what? I heard that on Mock the Week last week.
Did you?
Yeah. That one's doing the rounds.
What does Mr. Miyagi do to relax? Wax off.
You can't tell that.
I can't tell that. That was from... who was that from?
Take it back.
Will the Thrill. I take it back. No, it's like wax on, wax off.
Wax on. Is that what Mr. Miyagi says?
Yeah, when he trains the kid in the Karate Kid.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so funny, I forgot to laugh.
Listen, you know when you get annoyed, Adam?
Adenoid.
And sometimes you ask for a chill cake.
Sure.
Can I have a slice of chill cake?
Yeah.
I was waiting for you to get annoyed about something in the show to do this, but you seem fairly sanguine.
Oh, yeah. Well,
because
you know,
someone's made us a chill cake.
No, have they?
Yeah, look at this.
Well, I'm annoyed about my arm. I'd love some chill cake. Who sent it to us? How do we know it's not poison chill
cake? Tom Williamson. Well, we don't. Dear Adam and Joe, I have finally got round to baking and sending you a chill cake.
Wow.
It's a double-layered sponge cake, flavoured with mint, filled with real whipped cream. I'm just unwrapping it here,
mint.
Listeners. And topped with dark chocolate.
Perfect, because mint is the key ingredient for any chillaxing session.
I've made it for some friends. I assume he means he's, you know, tested out the recipe.
Yeah.
One of them told me it tasted like the cake equivalent of a Viscount biscuit.
Ooh, nice tasty. Biscuit.
Ooh. So here it is. I mean, one of the things that you're not supposed to do when you're a presenter is eat things that are sent to you.
Especially on the radio.
Yeah. Why is that? That's something just that you sort of come to know early in any sort of broadcasting career, right?
Yeah, because you never know if
put drugs or
maybe like a loon has sent it to you.
Ooh,
but what are we doing? We're just assuming
here's your chill cake.
Oh, so I'm eating the chill cake. Well, you have to have some as well.
Here's your chill cake.
Otherwise, I'm just going to be...
It's a nice looking
either
cake.
Either dying
though,
or tripping
Tom,
on my
Tom, that's
own.
Fantastic. There's the cake, and it smells very chilled.
You know, a member of the band Bear Suit made me a cake the other day.
Really?
Yeah, they came along to a bug gig that
did
I did.
Did you eat that cake?
No, you know, me and my whole family ate it.
Did
it was
you?
Delicious.
Why did you start saying, no, I ch...
No. I said I absolutely loved it. It was amazing. I said, you know, I ate every single little bit.
So is this...
Cut us a slice of chill cake, then.
Is the aroma making us feel more chilled?
I don't know. Hey, Ben, listen, let's have the Text the Nation jingle while we're having some chill cake, OK?
Text the Nation. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
Go on, you have to have some too.
You have some first.
You have the chill cake.
We're going to eat it simultaneously.
Yes. Yes, and see who drops dead first. What a way to actually kill someone, though, to send them a chill cake.
Nom.
Mmm.
No, something tastes a bit funny.
Has got a strange aftertaste.
I'm sure I can... What is that? There's a peculiar taste in there. I think it might be adenosine triosphate.
If we're lucky, it is. I think it might be strychnine.
It's not making me feel very chilled.
It's making me feel worried.
I mean, a dead person could be described as chilled, couldn't they?
Oh, exactly.
He's so really chilled.
This would be a chill cake to make someone dead and cold.
I just took another bite. I'm going to be sick.
It's the aftertaste. Holy.
This is a bad idea. If we die, this would be noble. Killed by a listener's cake.
Oh. Listen, man, no disrespect. Who made the chill cake?
You know when you can't swallow something?
Yeah.
And
it's
you're just playing for time by over masticating.
Yeah. It's very curious. Who made the chill cake?
I need some water. Tom Wilkinson. From HM Prison.
What?
No. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Tom, that's delicious. I'm sure it's fine. And,
it's absolutely fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Listen, here are some Text the Nations on account of the jingle we played a second ago. It's all about repurposing famous names for, like, household use. Simon and Amy in York say, a while ago, I couldn't remember the word for the person that delivers letters. The best I could come up with was Letterman. We now call the postman David, as in the popular US chat show host David Letterman. Adam's vomited his cake up. Did you swallow it? You didn't even swallow it. Ben's bringing the bin over. Adam's putting his chill cake in the bin. I ate my chill cake, for God's sake. Did you not swallow any of it?
I took another bite. Yeah, I swallowed some, but I took another bite because I liked the look of the middle part.
A second bite.
But then it just like I thought it was a creamy filling, but it was just like a gob of butter or something.
That's not a nice way to describe butter.
No.
A gob.
Anyway.
You mean a knob?
No, it was more
gob.
Like
it was more like a gob.
It's more like a gob.
Hello, Adam and Joe. I think this example may be rather obvious and commonly used, but when it rains, I like to ask my lovely wife to bring her Natalie Imbruglia. Is that supposed to sound like umbrella?
Umbrella, that's very tenuous.
Well, this person says it's obvious and commonly used.
Your umbrella.
Natalie Umbreglia.
My umbrella.
All the best, Alexander in London. This might be a rubbish Text the Nation. Sometimes it happens. Someone did send in an email.
That is just not Boris Goodenough.
You see, that's more like it.
Watch out is another little bit. It might be wicked. It might be one of the weaker bits. But that's cool. I like weaker bits. I can handle up to three.
I want to talk accents with you.
Good.
Right? Paul Barton, he made me aware of this, sent me a link to this. And, you know, we're fans of strange accents on this programme. And there's nothing more enjoyable, I find, than an American doing quite a strange British accent.
Mm.
It doesn't happen very often. There's a lot of Brits doing bad American accents.
Mm-hmm.
Not so many Americans doing terrible British
accents. I don't
know. Really? Who can you think of?
Well, I can think of... Oh, mind you, he's actually British. I always think of Charlie Hunnan in the film Green Street that we played weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
But he's actually British.
Is he
That's
really?
The confusing thing, yeah.
What, is he a northerner, is he? He's just doing a strange...
I think so, yeah.
Cockney accent.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, I'll accept the premise. Yeah, definitely, you don't get so many of them.
I mean, the Americans generally do a pretty good British accent.
Mm.
But there's a woman on the internet, on YouTube, I saw this clip. She's setting herself up as a dialogue coach, even.
Mm.
So you would think someone who would pretty much have nailed the British accent. I'll play you a couple of clips right now of her talking you through it. Here's the first one.
Now let's practice the short O. And again, I'll give you words and sentences. I'll say them standard American first, followed up with the British dialect. Hot. Hot. Coffee. Coffee. Fought. Fought. Bobby. Bobby. Not. Not.
So she gets not fairly well.
Coffee.
Her model seems to be sort of Mary Poppins era British aristocracy, Edwardian or Victorian or something. And she's not really aware of how modern British people, like at least people like Gwyneth Paltrow, even though they do tend to do the slightly kind of Notting Hill voice.
Yes.
They don't really move around that much as far as the accent goes. They're pretty good on that accent. They're very good, you know.
It's amazing, isn't it?
She's not really got to grips with the whole thing. She gives us a few more examples and integrates some of those words into sentences here.
Now some sentences. Lost coffee is not to be fought over. Lost coffee is not to be fought over. The dog was lost in the fog. The dog was lost in the fog. The loft smelled like strong coffee. The loft smelled like strong coffee.
Or coffee.
Coffee.
She's got coffee wrong, hasn't she? It's not that bad on some of it, but it's a particular type of English person,
That's
as you
what I'm
say,
saying,
isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. Come for a kind of Lord of the Manor, Lord Snooty kind of
the
deal.
The loft smells of strong coffee.
But that's what Americans like to imagine Britain as, right?
Yeah.
Kind of a green and pleasant land full of stately homes.
Who says coffee?
Coffee.
I've never heard any, not even a Lord of the Manor says.
Do you think if you went to America and started talking like that,
yes,
that people wouldn't think it was unusual at all?
I love your accent. Where are you from?
I'm from the coffer-making capital of London.
I have a dog, but unfortunately the dog is lost in the fog. Luckily it smells of strong coffee, so I'm able to locate it quite easily.
That was a great chat. Here comes another Adam and Joe. Rocking the podcast now.
Oh, Martin.
Excuse me.
Hey, we should just plug the Electric Proms Song Wars event that's taking place on the 22nd of October at the London Roundhouse.
That's like 2 weeks or something, isn't it?
There's going to be videos, live performances, and the Song Wars competition winners.
Nice enthusiasm.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I got to be honest.
God.
Anyway, the application period for tickets has already passed. No further tickets are available for the event. And if you want to enter the Song Wars competition, you have to get your entry in by 4 p.m. on Wednesday the 14th of October. I'm just feeling a bit queasy. The chill cake is still causing problems.
Are you nervous because it's a live thing we're doing?
Yeah, you know me. I don't really like...
you don't relish the live appearances?
No, not really.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, but this will be fun. It'll be fun. You know, the thing that's going to be nice about this is it'll be purely listeners to the show in the audience, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It'll be friendly.
They'll be good.
It'll be fun.
We'll make a joke out of the fact that you're a little bit nervous.
Listen, when
we were at Glastonbury, you were great.
Well, that's the other thing. You know, once I get out there, I'll switch the other way.
Yeah.
I'll get overconfident.
Aggressively overconfident and ruin the whole thing.
But listen, we have had so far, since the A grand total of 18 entries in total.
Oh, yeah.
There have been 18 entries to our Song Wars competition, where we ask you to check out our website, where you will find karaoke versions of two Song Wars songs. We want you to perform them karaoke style, video it, send us a link to that video, and then the best performances will join us on stage at that event and perform with us or something. Yeah, they'll be part of the chaos,
sing
basically.
Along to the song, exactly.
But yeah, it's still a very open goal, so please enter it. Got until 4 p.m. on Wednesday the 14th of October.
It is an open goal, yeah, because, I mean, technically we've had 18 entries to the competition.
And that's the end of this week's podcast. Now here's a goodbye link.
Thank you. You've been wonderful. Throw me your dirty pants. I'll wash them and get them back to you. Thank you.
Ah, so there we go. Another show, another schmo.
Yeah, that was an all right one. It was a little bit wobbly, I think, this week. You know, everything has its peaks and its troughs. That maybe was a tiny little bit troughaholic. Troughular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As Dr. Seuss might say.
Yeah. You can't really... I was going to say trough-tastic, but you can't end a word with tastic anymore, can you, really?
Oh, come on. Surely the embargo is off. I mean, there was a bit of a embargo.
So instead I went for troughaholic.
Right.
And what did you go for?
Troughular.
Troughular. Trophotron? Would that have been good?
A lot of people are putting Tron on the end of
words
now. I mean, I've always been fond of putting Tron on the end of
Tastic
words.
Was terrific about 10 years ago, you know, wasn't
Smashy
it?
And Nicey basically and cornered the Tastic market.
I think the aholic affix.
Yeah.
Is it an affix, a suffix, a prefix? It's not a prefix.
Suffix, I would say, yeah.
Yeah. Aholic, I think that's the hot one right now.
You reckon?
Yeah.
What about Arama?
That's a bit 70s. That's a bit Simpsons.
Really?
Yeah, it's a bit 90s even.
Oh,
mid-90s.
My goodness.
Yeah, it's important to get this right, though.
How about Meister?
Meister. I've forgotten the word we're attaching these things to.
Trough.
Troughmeister. Well, it wouldn't have worked for that particular context.
No.
Meister, I don't know about that either. I think that's a bit sort of frat boy.
It is a little
It's a bit obnoxious.
Yeah.
Troughaholic's the way to go. Because it's sort of about addiction, isn't it? And that's very contemporary.
Nice.
It's almost a burden. Okay,
it's an Eric. It's an Eric Burden. Just to use one final famous name there at the end.
Yep.
Thank you so much, listeners, not only for tuning in and downloading this podcast, but mainly for being you. Have a good week, and we'll be back with you again same time next week. Take
Thanks
care.
For listening.
I love you. Bye!
Bye!
If you enjoyed the Adam and Joe podcast, then why not try the John Richardson podcast? Download it now. bbc.co.uk/6music.
It's like a little fun bit of pepper or hundreds of thousands or salt or
something. Don't get overexcited about it.
It's like sprinkles on the show. It's like a fun thing.
Yeah.
Don't get... excited about
don't get too excited
don't get too excited or stirred up,
you silly bum,
you idiot bum.